Side 10, The Robots of Dawn. Continuing on page 380.
And what have you to say to that, Dr. Fastolf?
Asked the chairman. Fastolf sighed.
My views are on record. I'm sure I don't need to repeat them. Dr. Amadiro plans to use humaniform robots to build the settled worlds that human Aurorans will then enter ready-made. Yet he doesn't even have humaniform robots. He cannot construct them, and the project would not work even if he did have them. No compromise is possible unless Dr. Amadiro consents to the principle that Earth people may at least share in the task of the settlement of new worlds.
Then no compromise is possible, said Amadiro. The chairman looked displeased. I'm afraid that one of you two must give in. I do not intend Aurora to be torn apart in an emotional orgy on a question this important.
He looked at Amadiro blankly, his expression carefully signifying neither favor nor disfavor.
You intend to use the inoperability of the robot Jander as an argument against Fastolf's view, do you not?
I do, said Amadiro.
A purely emotional argument. You are going to claim that Fastolf is trying to destroy your view by falsely making humaniform robots appear less useful than they in effect are.
That is exactly what he is trying to do.
Slander,
put in Fastolf in a low voice.
Not if I can prove it, which I can, said Amadiro. The argument may be an emotional one, but it will be effective. You see that, Mr. Chairman, don't you?
My view will surely win, but left to itself it will be messy. I would suggest that you persuade Dr. Fastolf to accept inevitable defeat and spare Aurora the enormous sadness of a spectacle that will weaken our position among the spacer worlds and shake our own belief in ourselves. How can you prove that Dr. Fastolf rendered the robot inoperative?
He himself admits he is the only human being who could have done so. You know this.
I know, said the chairman, but I wanted to hear you say this, not to your constituency, not to the media, but to me in private, and you have done so.
He turned to Fastolf.
And what do you say, Dr. Fastolf? Are you the only man who could have destroyed the robot?
Without leaving physical marks, I am, as far as I know. I don't believe that Dr. Amadiro has the skill in robotics to do so. And I am constantly amazed that after having founded his robotics institute, he is so eager to proclaim his own incapacity, even with all his associates at his back, and to do so publicly.
He smiled at Amadiro, not entirely without malice. The chairman sighed.
No, Dr. Fastolf, no rhetorical tricks now. Let us dispense with sarcasm and clever thrusts. What is your defense?
Why, only that I did no harm to Jander. I do not say anyone did. It was chance. The uncertainty principle at work on the positronic pathways. It can happen every so often. Let Dr. Amadiro merely admit that it was chance, that no one be accused without evidence, and we can then argue the competing proposals about settlement on their own merits.
No, said Amadiro. The chance of accidental destruction is too small to be considered, far smaller than the chance that Dr. Fastolf is responsible, so much smaller that to ignore Dr. Fastolf's guilt is irresponsible. I will not back down, and I will win.
Mr. Chairman, you know I will win. And it seems to me that the only rational step to be taken is to force Dr. Fastolf to accept his defeat in the interest of global unity.
Fastolf said quickly,
And that brings me to the matter of the investigation I have asked Mr. Bailey of Earth to undertake.
And Amadiro said just as quickly,
A move I opposed when it was first suggested. The Earthman may be a clever investigator, but he is unfamiliar with Aurora, and can accomplish nothing here. Nothing, that is, except to strew slander, and to hold Aurora up to the spacer worlds in an undignified and ridiculous light. There have been satirical pieces on the matter in half a dozen important spacer hyperwave news programs on as many different worlds. Recordings of these have been sent to your office.
And have been brought to my attention, said the chairman.
And there has been murmuring here on Aurora, Amadiro drove on. It would be to my selfish interest to allow the investigation to continue. It is costing Fastolf support among the populace and votes among the legislators. The longer it continues, the more certain I am of victory. But it is damaging Aurora, and I do not wish to add to my certainty at the cost of harm to my world. I suggest with respect that you end the investigation, Mr. Chairman, and persuade Dr. Fastolf to submit gracefully now to what he will eventually have to accept at much greater cost.
The chairman said, I agree that to have permitted Dr. Fastolf to set up this investigation may have been unwise. I say may. I admit I am tempted to end it, and yet the Earthman,
he gave no indication of knowing that Bailey was in the room,
has already been here for some time.
He paused, as though to give Fastolf a chance for corroboration, and Fastolf took it, saying,
This is the third day of his investigation, Mr. Chairman.
In that case, said the chairman, before I end that investigation, it would be fair, I believe, to ask if there have been any significant findings so far.
He paused again. Fastolf glanced quickly at Bailey and made a small motion of his head. Bailey said in a low voice,
I do not wish, Mr. Chairman, to obtrude unasked any observations. Am I being asked a question?
The chairman frowned. Without looking at Bailey, he said,
I am asking Mr. Bailey of Earth to tell us whether he has any findings of significance.
Bailey took a deep breath. This was it. 76.
Mr. Chairman,
he began.
Yesterday afternoon I was interrogating Dr. Amadiro, who was most cooperative and useful to me. When my staff and I left...
Your staff? Asked the chairman.
I was accompanied by two robots on all phases of my investigation, Mr. Chairman,
said Bailey.
Robots who belong to Dr. Fastolf? Asked Amadiro. I ask this for the record.
For the record, they do, said Bailey. One is Daniil Olival, a humaniform robot, and the other is Giscard Reventlov, an older, non-humaniform robot.
Thank you, said the chairman. Continue.
When we left the Institute grounds, we found that the airfoil we used had been tampered with.
Tampered with? Asked the chairman, startled.
By whom? We don't know, but it happened on Institute grounds. We were there by invitation, so it was known by the Institute personnel that we would be there. Moreover, no one else would be likely to be there without the invitation and knowledge of the Institute staff. If it were at all thinkable, it would be necessary to conclude that the tampering could only have been done by someone on the Institute staff, and that would in any case be impossible, except at the direction of Dr. Amadiro himself, which would also be unthinkable.
Amadiro said, You seem to think a great deal about the unthinkable. Has the airfoil been examined by a qualified technician to see if it has indeed been tampered with? Might there not have been a natural failing? Asked Amadiro.
No, sir, said Bailey. But Giscard, who is qualified to drive an airfoil and who has frequently driven that particular one, maintains that it was tampered with.
And he is one of Dr. Fastolf's staff and is programmed by him and receives his daily orders from him, said Amadiro.
Are you suggesting... began Fastolf.
I am suggesting nothing.
Amadiro held up his hand in a benign gesture.
I am merely making a statement for the record.
The chairman stirred.
Will Mr. Bailey of Earth please continue?
Bailey said, When the airfoil broke down, there were others in pursuit.
Others? Asked the chairman.
Other robots. They arrived, and by that time my robots were gone.
One moment, said Amadiro. What was your condition at the time, Mr. Bailey?
I was not entirely well.
Not entirely well? You are an Earthman and unaccustomed to life except in the artificial setting of your cities. You are uneasy in the open, is that not so, Mr. Bailey?
Asked Amadiro.
Yes, sir.
And there was a severe thunderstorm in progress last evening, as I am sure the chairman recalls. Would it not be accurate to say that you were quite ill, semi-conscious, if not worse?
I was quite ill, said Bailey reluctantly.
Then how is it your robots were gone? Asked the chairman sharply. Should they not have been with you in your illness?
I ordered them away, Mr. Chairman.
Why?
I thought it best, said Bailey, and I will explain if I may be allowed to continue.
Continue.
We were indeed being pursued, for the pursuing robots arrived shortly after my robots had left. The pursuers asked me where my robots were, and I told them I had sent them away. It was only after that that they asked if I were ill. I said I wasn't ill, and they left me in order to continue a search for my robots.
In search of Daniil and Giscard? Asked the chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It was clear to me that they were under intense orders to find the robots.
In what way was that clear?
Although I was obviously ill, they asked about the robots before they asked about me. Then, later, they abandoned me in my illness to search for my robots. They must have received enormously intense orders to find those robots, or it would not have been possible for them to disregard a patently ill human being. As a matter of fact,
I had anticipated this search for my robots, and that was why I had sent them away. I felt it all important to keep them out of unauthorized hands. Amadeiro said, Mr. Chairman, may I continue to question Mr. Bailey on this point, in order to show the worthlessness of this statement?
You may.
Amadeiro said, Mr. Bailey, you were alone after your robots had left, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Therefore, you have no recording of events. You are not yourself equipped to record them. You have no recording device?
No, to all three, sir.
And you were ill?
Yes, sir.
Distraught, possibly too ill to remember clearly?
No, sir, I remember quite clearly.
You would think so, I suppose, but you may well have been delirious and hallucinating. Under those conditions, it seems clear that what the robots said, or indeed whether robots appeared at all, would seem highly dubious.
The chairman said thoughtfully,
I agree. Mr. Bailey of Earth, assuming that what you remember, or claim to remember, is accurate, what is your interpretation of the events you are describing?
I hesitate to give you my thoughts on the matter, Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, lest I slander the worthy Dr. Amadeiro.
Since you speak at my request, and since your remarks are confined to this room,
the chairman looked around, the wall niches were empty of robots,
there is no question of slander, unless it seems to me you speak with malice.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, said Bailey,
I had thought it possible that Dr. Amadeiro detained me in his office by discussing matters with me at greater length than was perhaps necessary, so that there would be time for the damaging of my machine, then detained me further in order that I might leave after the thunderstorm had begun, thus making sure that I would be ill in transit. He had studied Earth's social conditions, as he told me several times, so he would know what my reaction to the storm might be. It seemed to me that it was his plan to send his robots after us, and when they came upon our stalled airfoil, to have them take us all back to the Institute grounds, presumably so that I might be treated for my illness, but actually so that he might have Dr. Fastolf's robots.
Amadeiro laughed gently.
What motive am I supposed to have for all this? You see, Mr. Chairman, that this is supposition joined to supposition and would be judged slander in any court on Aurora.
The chairman said severely,
Has Mr. Bailey of Earth anything to support these hypotheses?
A line of reasoning, Mr. Chairman.
The chairman stood up, at once losing some of his presence, since he scarcely unfolded to a greater than sitting height.
Let me take a short walk, so that I might consider what I have heard so far. I will be right back.
He left for the personal. Fastolf leaned in the direction of Bailey, and Bailey met him halfway. Amadeiro looked on in casual unconcern, as though it scarcely mattered to him what they might have to say to each other. Fastolf whispered,
Have you anything better to say?
Bailey said, I think so, if I get the proper chance to say it. But the chairman does not seem to be sympathetic.
He is not. So far you have merely made things worse, and I would not be surprised if, when he comes back, he calls these proceedings to a halt.
Bailey shook his head and stared at his shoes.
77. Bailey was still staring at his shoes when the chairman returned, reseated himself, and turned a hard and rather baleful glance at the Earthman. He said, Mr. Bailey of Earth?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I think you are wasting my time, but I do not want it said that I did not give either side a full hearing, even when it seemed to be wasting my time. Can you offer me a motive that would account for Dr. Amadeiro acting in the mad way in which you accuse him of acting?
Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, in a tone approaching desperation, there is indeed a motive, a very good one. It rests on the fact that Dr. Amadeiro's plan for settling the galaxy will come to nothing if he and his institute cannot produce humaniform robots. So far, he has produced none, and can produce none. Ask him if he is willing to have a legislative committee examine his institute for any indication that successful humaniform robots are being produced or designed. If he is willing to maintain that successful humaniforms are on the assembly lines, or even on the drawing boards, or even in adequate theoretical formulation, and if he is prepared to demonstrate that fact to a qualified committee, I will say nothing more and admit that my investigation has achieved nothing.
He held his breath. The chairman looked at Amadeiro, whose smile had faded.
Amadeiro said, I will admit that we have no humaniform robots in prospect at the moment.
Then I will continue, said Bailey, resuming his interrupted breathing with something very much like a gasp. Dr. Amadiro can, of course, find all the information he needs for his project if he turns to Dr. Fastolf, who has the information in his head. But Dr. Fastolf will not cooperate in this matter.
No, I will not, murmured Fastolf. Under any conditions.
But, Mr. Chairman, Bailey continued, Dr. Fastolf is not the only individual who has the secret of the design and construction of humaniform robots.
No, said the chairman. Who else would know? Dr. Fastolf himself looks astonished at your comment, Mr. Bailey.
For the first time, he did not add, of Earth.
I am indeed astonished, said Fastolf. To my knowledge, I am certainly the only one. I don't know what Mr. Bailey means.
Amadiro said with a small curling of the lip, I suspect Mr. Bailey doesn't know either. Bailey felt hemmed in. He looked from one to the other and felt that not one of them, not one, was on his side. He said, Isn't it true that any humaniform robot would know? Not consciously, perhaps, not in such a way as to be able to give instructions in the matter, but the information would surely be there within him, wouldn't it? If a humaniform robot was properly questioned, his answers and responses would betray his design and construction. Eventually, given enough time, and given questions properly framed, a humaniform robot would yield information that would make it possible to plan the design of other humaniform robots. To put it briefly, no machine can be of secret design if the machine itself is available for sufficiently intense study. Fastolf seemed struck.
I see what you mean, Mr. Bailey. And you are right. I had never thought of that.
With respect, Dr. Fastolf, said Bailey, I must tell you that, like all Aurorans, you have a peculiarly individualistic pride. You are entirely too satisfied with being the best roboticist, the only roboticist who can construct humaniforms. So you blind yourself to the obvious. The chairman relaxed into a smile.
He has you there, Dr. Fastolf. I have wondered why you were so eager to maintain that you were the only one with the know-how to destroy Xander when that so weakened your political case. I see clearly now that you would rather have your political case go down than your uniqueness.
Fastolf chafed visibly. As for Amadiro, he frowned and said, Has this anything to do with the problem in our discussion?
Yes, it does, said Bailey, his confidence rising. You cannot force any information from Dr. Fastolf directly. Your robots cannot be ordered to do him harm, to torture him into revealing his secrets, for instance. You can't harm him directly yourself against the protection of Dr. Fastolf by his staff. However, you can isolate a robot and have it taken by other robots when the human being present is too ill to take the necessary action to prevent you. All the events of yesterday afternoon were part of a quickly improvised plan to get your hands on Daniil. You saw your opportunity as soon as I insisted on seeing you at the Institute. If I had not sent my robots away, if I had not been just well enough to insist I was well and to send your robots in the wrong direction, you would have had him. And eventually you might have worked out the secret of humaniform robots by some long-sustained analysis of Daniil's behavior and responses.
Amadiro said, Mr. Chairman, I protest. I have never heard slander so viciously expressed. This is all based on the fancies of an ill man. We don't know, and perhaps can't ever know, whether the airfoil was really damaged, and if it was, by whom. Whether robots really pursued the airfoil and really spoke to Mr. Bailey or not. He is merely piling inference on inference, all based on dubious testimony concerning events of which he is the only witness, and that at a time when he was half mad with fear and may have been hallucinating. None of this can stand up for one moment in a courtroom.
This is not a courtroom, Dr. Amadiro, said the chairman, and it is my duty to listen to everything that may be germane to a question under dispute.
This is not germane, Mr. Chairman. It is a cobweb.
Yet it hangs together somehow. I do not seem to catch Mr. Bailey in a clear-cut illogicality. If one admits what he claims to have experienced, then his conclusions make a kind of sense. Do you deny all this, Dr. Amadiro? The airfoil damage, the pursuit, the intention to appropriate the humaniform robot?
I do, absolutely. None of it is true, said Amadiro.
It had been a noticeable while since he had smiled. The Earthman can produce a recording of our entire conversation,
and no doubt he will point out that I was delaying him by speaking at length, by inviting him to tour the Institute, by inviting him to have dinner. But all that can equally well be interpreted as my stretching a point to be courteous and hospitable. I was misled by a certain sympathy I have for Earthmen, perhaps, and that's all there is to that. I deny his inferences, and nothing of what he says can stand up against my denial. My reputation is not such that a mere speculation can persuade anyone that I am the kind of devious plotter this Earthman says I am. The chairman scratched at his chin thoughtfully and said, "Certainly I am not of a mind to accuse you on the basis of what the Earthman has said so far. Mr. Bailey, if this is all you have, it is interesting but insufficient. Is there anything more you have to say of substance? I warn you that if not, I have now spent all the time on this that I can afford to." 78. Bailey said, "There is but one more subject I wish to bring up, Mr. Chairman. You have perhaps heard of Gladia Del Mar, or Gladia Solaria. She calls herself simply Gladia." "Yes, Mr. Bailey," said the chairman with a testy edge to his voice. "I have heard of her. I have seen the hyperwave show in which you and she play such remarkable parts." She was associated with the robot Jander for many months. In fact, toward the end, he was her husband. The chairman's unfavorable stare at Bailey became a hard glare. "Her what?" "Husband, Mr. Chairman." Fastoff, who half rose, sat down again, looking perturbed. The chairman said harshly, "That is illegal. Worse, it is ridiculous. A robot could not impregnate her. There could be no children. The status of a husband or of a wife is never granted without some statement as to willingness to have a child, if permitted. Even an Earthman, I should think, would know that." Bailey said, "I am aware of this, Mr. Chairman. So I am certain was Gladia. She did not use the word husband in its legal sense, but in an emotional one. She considered Jander the equivalent of a husband. She felt toward him as though he were a husband." The chairman turned to Fastoff. "Did you know of this, Dr. Fastoff? He was a robot on your staff." Fastoff, clearly embarrassed, said, "I knew she was fond of him. I suspected she made use of him sexually. I knew nothing of this illegal charade, however, until Mr. Bailey told me of it." Bailey said, "She was a Solarian. Her concept of husband was not Auroran."
"Obviously not," said the chairman.
"But she did have enough of a sense of reality to keep it to herself, Mr. Chairman. She never told of this charade, as Dr. Fastoff calls it, to any Auroran. She told me the day before yesterday because she wanted to urge me on in the investigation of something that meant so much to her. Yet even so, I imagine she would not have used the word if she had not known I was an Earthman and would understand it in her sense and not in an Auroran's."
"Very well," said the chairman. "I'll grant her a bare minimum of good sense for a Solarian. Is that the one more subject you wanted to bring up?"
"Yes, Mr. Chairman."
"In that case, it is totally irrelevant and can play no part in our deliberations."
"Mr. Chairman, there is one question I must still ask. One question. 12 words, sir, and then I will be through." He said it as earnestly as he could, for everything depended on this. The chairman hesitated.
"Agreed. One last question."
"Yes, Mr. Chairman." Bailey would have liked to bark out the words, but he refrained. Nor did he raise his voice. Nor did he even point his finger. Everything depended on this. Everything had led up to this. And yet he remembered Fastoff's warning and said it almost casually. "How is it that Dr. Amadiro knew that Jander was Gladia's husband?"
"What?"
The chairman's white and bushy eyebrows raised themselves in surprise.
"Who said he knew anything of this?"
Asked a direct question, Bailey could continue.
"Ask him, Mr. Chairman."
And he merely nodded in the direction of Amadiro, who had risen from his seat and was staring at Bailey in obvious horror. 79. Bailey said again, very softly, reluctant to draw attention away from Amadiro, "Ask him, Mr. Chairman. He seems upset." The chairman said,
"What is this, Dr. Amadiro? Did you know anything about the robot as supposed husband of this Solarian woman?"
Amadiro stuttered, then pressed his lips together for a moment and tried again. The paleness which had struck him had vanished, and was replaced by a dull flush. He said,
I am caught by surprise at this meaningless accusation, Mr. Chairman. I do not know what it is all about.
May I explain, Mr. Chairman, very briefly? Said Bailey. Would he be cut off?
You had better, said the chairman grimly. If you have any explanation, I would certainly like to hear it.
Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, I had a conversation with Dr. Amadiro yesterday afternoon. Because it was his intention to keep me until the storm broke, he spoke more lengthily than he intended, and apparently more carelessly. In referring to Gladia, he casually referred to the robot Jander as her husband. I'm curious as to how he knew that fact.
Is this true, Dr. Amadiro? Asked the chairman.
Amadiro was still standing, bearing almost the appearance of a prisoner before a judge. He said,
Whether it is true or not has no bearing on the question in our discussion. Perhaps not, said the chairman. But I was astonished at your reaction to the question when it was put. It occurs to me that there is a meaning to this, that Mr. Bailey and you both understand, and that I do not. I, therefore, want to understand also. Did you or did you not know of this impossible relationship between Jander and the Solarian woman?
Amadiro said in a choking voice, I could not possibly have.
That is no answer, said the chairman. That is an equivocation. You are making a judgment when I am asking you to hand me a memory. Did you or did you not make the statement imputed to you?
Before he answers, said Bailey, feeling more certain of his ground now that the chairman was governed by moral outrage, it is only fair to Dr. Amadiro for me to remind him that Giscard, a robot who was also present at the meeting, can, if asked to do so, repeat the entire conversation, word for word, using the voice and intonation of both parties. In short, the conversation is recorded.
Amadiro burst into a kind of rage. Mr. Chairman, the robot Giscard was designed, constructed, and programmed by Dr. Fastoff, who announces himself to be the best roboticist who exists and who is bitterly opposed to me. Can we trust a recording produced by such a robot?
Bailey said, Perhaps you ought to hear the recording and come to your own decision, Mr. Chairman.
Perhaps I ought, said the chairman. I am not here, Dr. Amadiro, to have my decisions made for me. But let us put that aside for a moment. Regardless of what the recording says, Dr. Amadiro, do you wish to state for the record that you did not know that the Solarian woman considered her robot to be her husband and that you never referred to him as her husband? Please remember, as you both, being legislators, should, that although no robot is present, this entire conversation is being recorded in my own device.
He tapped a small bulge at his breast pocket.
Flatly then, Dr. Amadiro, yes or no?
Amadiro said, with an edge of desperation in his voice, Mr. Chairman, I honestly cannot remember what I said in casual conversation. If I did mention the word, and I don't admit I did, it may have been the result of some other casual conversation in which someone mentioned the fact that Gladia acted as love-struck toward her robot as though he were her husband.
The chairman said, And with whom did you have this other casual conversation? Who made this statement to you?
At the moment, I cannot say. Bailey said, Mr. Chairman, if Dr. Amadiro will be so kind as to list anyone and everyone who might have used the word to him, we can question every one of them to discover which one can remember making such a remark.
Amadiro said, I hope, Mr. Chairman, you will consider the effect on the morale of the Institute if anything of this sort is done.
The chairman said, I hope you will consider it too, Dr. Amadiro, and come up with a better answer to our question so that we are not forced to extremes.
One moment, Mr. Chairman, said Bailey, as obsequiously as he could manage. There remains a question.
Again, another one? The chairman looked at Bailey without favor.
What is it?
Why is Dr. Amadiro struggling so to avoid admitting he knew of Jander's relation to Gladia? He says it is irrelevant. In that case, why not say he knew of the relationship and be done with it? I say it is relevant, and that Dr. Amadiro knows that his admission could be used to demonstrate criminal activity on his part.
Amadiro thundered, I resent the expression and I demand an apology.
Fastoff smiled thinly, and Bailey's lips pressed together grimly. He had forced Amadiro over the edge. The chairman turned an almost alarming red and said with passion,
You demand? To whom do you demand?
I am the chairman. I hear all views before deciding what to suggest is best to be done. Let me hear what the Earthman has to say about his interpretation of your action. If he is slandering you, he shall be punished, you may be sure. And I will take the broadest view of the slander statutes, too, you may be sure. But you, Amadeiro, may make no demands upon me. Go on, Earthman, say what you have to say, but be extraordinarily careful.
Bailey said, Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, there is one Auroran to whom Gladia did tell the secret of her relationship with Jander.
The chairman interrupted, Well, who is that? Do not play your hyperwave tricks on me.
Bailey said, I have no intention of anything but a straightforward statement, Mr. Chairman. The one Auroran is, of course, Jander himself. He may have been a robot, but he is an inhabitant of Aurora and might be viewed as an Auroran. Gladia must surely, in her passion, have addressed him as my husband. Since Dr. Amadeiro has admitted he might possibly have heard from someone else some statement to the effect of Jander's husbandly relationship to Gladia, isn't it logical to suppose that he heard of the matter from Jander? Would Dr. Amadeiro be willing right now to state for the record that he never spoke to Jander during the period when Jander formed part of Gladia's staff? Twice, Amadeiro's mouth opened as though he would speak. Twice, he did not utter a sound.
Well, said the chairman, did you speak to Jander during that period, Dr. Amadeiro?
There was still no answer. Bailey said softly, If he did, it is entirely relevant to the matter at hand.
I'm beginning to see that it must be, Mr. Bailey. Well, Dr. Amadeiro, once again, yes or no?
And Amadeiro burst forth, What evidence does this Earthman have against me in this matter? Does he have a recording of any conversation I have had with Jander? Does he have witnesses who are willing to say they have seen me with Jander? What does he have anything at all besides mere self-serving statements?
The chairman turned to look at Bailey, and Bailey said, Mr. Chairman, if I have nothing at all, then Dr. Amadeiro should not hesitate to deny, for the record, any contact with Jander. But he does not do so. As it happens, in the course of my investigation, I spoke to Dr. Vasilia Aliena, the daughter of Dr. Fastolf. I spoke also to a young Auroran named Santirix Grimaianus. In the recordings of both interviews, it will be plain that Dr. Vasilia encouraged Grimaianus to pay court to Gladia. You may question Dr. Vasilia as to her purpose in so doing, and as to whether this course of action had been suggested to her by Dr. Amadeiro. It also appears that it was Grimaianus's custom to take long walks with Gladia, which both enjoyed, and on which they were not accompanied by the robot Jander. You might check on this, if you wish, sir.
The chairman said dryly,
I may do so, but if all is as you say, what does this show?
Bailey said, I have stated that, failing Dr. Fastolf himself, the secret of the humaniform robot could be obtained only from Daniil. Before Jander's death, it could, with equal facility, have been obtained from Jander. Whereas Daniil was part of Dr. Fastolf's establishment and could not easily be reached, Jander was part of Gladia's establishment, and she was not as sophisticated as Dr. Fastolf in seeing to a robot's protection. Isn't it likely that Dr. Amadeiro took the occasion of Gladia's periodic absences from her establishment, when she was walking with Grimaianus, to converse with Jander, perhaps by trimensional viewing, to study his responses, to subject him to various tests, and then to erase any sign of his visit with Jander so that he could never inform Gladia of it? It may be that he came close to finding what he wanted to know before the attempt ended when Jander went out of action. His concentration then shifted to Daniil. He felt perhaps that he had only a few tests and observations left to make, and so he set up the trap of yesterday evening, as I said earlier in my testimony. The chairman said in what was almost a whisper, Now it all hangs together. I am almost forced to believe.
Plus one final point, and then I will truly have nothing more to say, said Bailey.
In his examination and testing of Jander, it is entirely possible that Dr. Amadeiro accidentally, and without any deliberate intention whatever, immobilized Jander, and thus committed roboticide.
And Amadeiro, maddened, shouted, No, never! Nothing I did to that robot could possibly have immobilized him.
Fastolf interposed, I agree.
Mr. Chairman, I too think that Dr. Amadiro did not immobilize Jander. However, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Amadiro's statement just now would seem an implicit admission that he was working with Jander, and that Mr. Bailey's analysis of the situation is essentially accurate.
The chairman nodded. I am forced to agree with you, Dr. Fastoff. Dr. Amadiro, you may insist on a formal denial of all this, and that may force me into a full-fledged investigation, which could do you a great deal of damage, however it turned out. And I rather suspect at this stage it is likely to turn out to your great disadvantage. My suggestion is that you do not force this, that you do not cripple your own position in the legislature and perhaps cripple Aurora's ability to continue along a smooth political course. As I see it, before the matter of Jander's immobilization came up, Dr. Fastoff had a majority of the legislators, not a large majority, admittedly, on his side in the matter of galactic settlement. You would have swung enough legislators to your side by pushing the matter of Dr. Fastoff's supposed responsibility for Jander's immobilization, and thus have gained the majority. But now Dr. Fastoff, if he wishes, can turn the tables by accusing you of the immobilization, and moreover, of having tried to hang a false accusation upon your opponent as well, and you would lose. If I do not interfere, then it may be that you, Dr. Amadiro, and you, Dr. Fastoff, actuated by stubbornness or even vindictiveness, will both marshal your forces and accuse each other of all sorts of things. Our political forces and public opinion, too, will be hopelessly divided, even fragmented to our infinite harm. I believe that in that case, Fastoff's victory, while inevitable, would be a very costly one, so that it would be my task as the chairman to swing the votes in his direction to begin with, and to place pressure upon you and your faction, Dr. Amadiro, to accept Fastoff's victory with as much grace as you can manage, and to do it right now, for the good of Aurora. Fastoff said,
I am not interested in a crushing victory, Mr. Chairman. I propose again a compromise, whereby Aurora, the other spacer worlds, and Earth, too, all have the freedom of settlement in the galaxy. In return, I will be glad to join the Robotics Institute, put my knowledge of humaniform robots at its disposal, and thus facilitate Dr. Amadiro's plan in return for his solemn agreement to abandon all thought of retaliation against Earth at any time in the future, and to put this into treaty form with ourselves and Earth as signatories.
The chairman nodded. A wise and statesmanlike suggestion. May I have your acceptance of this, Dr. Amadiro? Amadiro now sat down. His face was a study in defeat. He said,
I have not wanted personal power or the satisfaction of victory. I wanted what I know to be best for Aurora, and I am convinced that this plan of Dr. Fastoff's means an end to Aurora someday. However, I recognize that I am now helpless against the work of this Earthman.
He shot a quick, venomous glance toward Bailey.
And I am forced to accept Dr. Fastoff's suggestion, though I will ask for permission to address the legislature on the subject and to state for the record my fears of the consequences.
We will, of course, allow that, said the chairman. And if you'll be guided by me, Dr. Fastoff, you'll get this Earthman off our world as fast as possible. He has won your viewpoint for you, but it will not be a very popular one if Aurorans have too long a time to brood over it as an earthly victory over Aurorans.
You are quite right, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Bailey will be gone quickly, with my thanks, and I trust with yours as well.
Well, said the chairman, not with the best of grace, since his ingenuity has saved us from a bruising political battle, he has my thanks. Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Chapter 19. Again, Bailey.
80.
Bailey watched them leave from a distance. Though Amadiro and the chairman had come together, they now left separately. Fastoff came back from seeing them off, making no attempt to hide his intense relief.
Come, Mr. Bailey, he said. You will have lunch with me, and then, as soon after that as possible, you will leave for Earth again.
His robotic staff was clearly in action with that in mind. Bailey nodded and said sardonically,
The chairman managed to thank me, but it seemed to stick in his throat.
Fastoff said,
You have no idea how you have been honored. The chairman rarely thanks anyone. but then no one ever thanks the chairman. It has always left a history to praise chairman, and this one has served for over 40 years. He has grown cranky and ill-tempered, as chairmen always do in their final decades. However, Mr. Bailey, once again, I thank you. And through me, Aurora will thank you. You will live to see Earthmen move outward into space, even in your short lifetime, and we will help you with our technology. How you have managed to untie this knot of ours, Mr. Bailey, in 2.5 days, less, I can't imagine. You are a wonder. But come, you will want to wash and freshen up. I know I do.
For the first time since the chairman arrived, Bailey had time to think of something besides his next sentence. He still didn't know what it was that had come to him 3 times, first on the point of sleep, then on the point of unconsciousness, and finally in post-coital relaxation. He was there first. It was still meaningless. Yet he had made his point to the chairman and carried all before him without it. Could it have any meaning at all, then, if it was a part of a mechanism that didn't fit and didn't seem needed? Was it nonsense? It chafed at the corner of his mind, and he came to lunch a victor without the proper sensation of victory. Somehow he felt as though he had missed the point. For one thing, would the chairman stick to his resolve? Amadeiro had lost the battle, but he didn't seem the kind of person who would give up altogether under any circumstances. Give him credit and assume he meant what he said, that he was driven not by personal vainglory, but by his concept of Auroran patriotism. If that were so, he could not give up. Bailey felt it necessary to warn Fastolf. Dr. Fastolf, he said, I don't think it's over. Dr. Amadeiro will continue the fight to exclude Earth. Fastolf nodded as the dishes were served.
I know he will. I expect him to. However, I have no fear as long as the matter of Jander's immobilization is set to rest. With that aside, I'm sure I can always outmaneuver him in the legislature. Fear not, Mr. Bailey. Earth will move along. No need you fear personal danger from a vengeful Amadeiro. You will be off this planet and on your way back to Earth before sunset. And Daniil will escort you, of course. What's more, the report we'll send with you will ensure once more a healthy promotion for you.
I am eager to go, said Bailey, but I hope I will have time to say my goodbyes. I would like to see Gladia once more, and I would like to say goodbye to Giscard, who may have saved my life last night.
No question of that, Mr. Bailey, but please eat, won't you?
Bailey went through the motions of eating, but didn't enjoy it. Like the confrontation with the chairman and the victory that ensued, the food was oddly flavorless. He should not have won. The chairman should have cut him off. Amadeiro, if necessary, should have made a flat denial. It would have been accepted over the word or the reasoning of an Earthman. But Fastolf was jubilant. He said,
I had feared the worst, Mr. Bailey. I feared the meeting with the chairman was premature and that nothing you could say would help the situation. Yet you managed it so well. I was lost in admiration listening to you. At any moment I expected Amadeiro to demand that his word be taken against an Earthman who, after all, was in a constant state of semi-madness at finding himself on a strange planet in the open.
Bailey said frigidly, With all respect, Dr. Fastolf, I was not in a constant state of semi-madness. Last night was exceptional, but it was the only time I lost control. For the rest of my stay on Aurora, I may have been uncomfortable from time to time, but I was always in my perfect mind. Some of the anger he had suppressed at considerable cost to himself in the confrontation with the chairman was expressing itself now. Only during the storm, sir, except, of course, recollecting for a moment or two on the approaching spaceship. He was not conscious of the manner in which the thought, the memory, the interpretation came to him or at what speed. One moment it did not exist, the next moment it was full-blown in his mind, as though it had been there all the time and needed only the bursting of a soap-bubble veil to show it. Jehoshaphat, he said in an awed whisper. Then, with his fist coming down on the table and rattling the dishes, Jehoshaphat!
What is it, Mr. Bailey?
Asked Fastolf, startled. Bailey stared at him and heard the question only belatedly. Nothing, Dr. Fastolf. I was just thinking of Dr. Amadeiro's infernal gall in doing the damage to Jander and then laboring to fix the blame on you in arranging to have me go half mad in the storm last night and then using that as a way of casting doubt on my statements. I was just
momentarily angry.
Well, no need to be, Mr. Bailey. And actually, it is quite impossible for Amadiro to have immobilized Jander. It remains purely a chance event. To be sure, it is possible that Amadiro's investigation may have increased the odds of such a chance event taking place, but I would not argue the matter.
Bailey heard the statement with half of one ear. What he had just said to Fastolf was fiction, and what Fastolf was saying didn't matter. It was, as the chairman would have said, irrelevant. In fact, everything that had happened, everything that Bailey had explained, was irrelevant. But nothing had to be changed because of that. Except one thing, after a while. Jehoshaphat, he whispered in the silence of his mind, and turned suddenly to the lunch, eating with gusto and with joy. 81. Once again, Bailey crossed the lawn between Fastolf's establishment and Gladia's. He would be seeing Gladia for the fourth time in 3 days, and his heart seemed to compress into a hard knot in his chest. Now, for the last time. Giscard was with him, but at a distance, more intent than ever on the surroundings. Surely, with the chairman in full possession of the facts, there should be a relaxation of any concern for Bailey's safety. If there ever had been any by rides when it was Daniil who had been in danger. Presumably Giscard had not yet been re-instructed in the matter. Only once did he approach Bailey, and that was when the latter called out, "Giscard, where's Daniil?" Swiftly, Giscard covered the ground between them, as though reluctant to speak in anything but a quiet tone. "Daniil is on his way to the spaceport, sir, in the company of several others of the staff, in order to make arrangements for your transportation to Earth. When you are taken to the spaceport, he will meet you there and be on the ship with you, taking his final leave of you at Earth." Good news. I treasure every day of companionship with Daniil. And you, Giscard, will you accompany us?
No, sir. I am instructed to remain on Aurora. However, Daniil will serve you well, even in my absence.
I am sure of that, Giscard, but I will miss you.
Thank you, sir, said Giscard, and retreated as rapidly as he had come.
Bailey gazed after him speculatively for a moment or so. No, first things first, he had to see Gladia.
82. She advanced to greet him, and what a world of change had taken place in 2 days. She was not joyous, she was not dancing, she was not bubbling. There was still the grave look of one who had suffered a shock and a loss. But the troubled aura around her was gone. There was a kind of serenity now, as though she had grown aware of the fact that life continued after all, and might even on occasion be sweet. She managed a smile, warm and friendly, as she advanced to him and held out her hand.
"Oh, take it, Elijah," she said when he hesitated. "It's ridiculous for you to hang back and pretend you don't want to touch me after last night. You see, I still remember it, and I haven't come to regret it. Quite the contrary." Bailey performed the unusual operation, for him, of smiling in return. "I remember it too, Gladia, and I don't regret it either. I would even like to do it again, but I have come to say goodbye." A shade fell across her face.
"Then you'll be going back to Earth. Yet the report I got by way of the robot network that always operates between Fastolf's establishment and my own is that all went well. You can't have failed."
"I did not fail. Dr. Fastolf has, in fact, won completely. I don't believe there will be any suggestion at all that he was in any way involved in Jander's death."
"Because of what you had to say, Elijah?"
"I believe so."
"I knew it." There was a tinge of self-satisfaction to that. "I knew you would do it when I told them to get you on the case. But then why are you being sent home?"
"Precisely because the case is solved. If I remain here longer, I will be a foreign irritant in the body politic, apparently." She looked at him, dubiously, for a moment, and said,
"I'm not sure what you mean by that. It sounds like an Earth expression to me, but never mind. Were you able to find out who killed Jander? That is the important part."
Bailey looked around. Giscard was standing in one niche, one of Gladia's robots in another. Gladia interpreted the look without trouble. She said, "Now, Elijah, you must learn to stop worrying about robots. You don't worry about the presence of the chair, do you? Or of these drapes?" Bailey nodded. "Well then, Gladia, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry, but I had to tell them of the fact that Jander was your husband." Her eyes opened wide, and he hastened on. "I had to.
It was essential to the case, but I promise it won't affect your status on Aurora. As briefly as he might, he summarized the events of the confrontation and concluded, "So you see, no one killed Jander. The immobilization was the result of a chance change in his positronic pathways, though the probabilities of that chance change may have been enhanced by what had been going on." "And I never knew," she moaned. "I never knew. I connived at this Amadeiro's foul plan, and he is the one responsible just as much as though he had deliberately hacked away at him with a sledgehammer."
"Gladia," said Bailey earnestly, "that is uncharitable. He had no intention of doing harm to Jander, and what he was doing was, in his own eyes, for the good of Aurora. As it is, he is punished. He is defeated. His plans are in shambles, and the Robotics Institute will come under the domination of Dr. Fastolf. You yourself could not work out a more suitable punishment, no matter how you tried."
She said, "I'll think about that. But what do I do with Santorix Grimianus, this good-looking young lackey whose job it was to lure me away? No wonder he appeared to cling to hope despite my repeated refusal. Well, he'll come here again, and I will have the pleasure of—"
Bailey shook his head violently. "Gladia, no. I have interviewed him, and I assure you he had no knowledge of what was going on. He was as much deceived as you were. In fact, you have it reversed. He was not persistent because it was important to lure you away. He was useful to Amadeiro because he was so persistent. And that persistence was out of regard for you. Out of love, if the word means on Aurora what it means on Earth."
"On Aurora, it is choreography. Jander was a robot and you were an Earthman. It is different with the Aurorans."
"So you have explained. But, Gladia, you learned from Jander to take. You learned from me, not that I meant it, to give. If you benefit by learning, is it not only right and fair that you should teach in your turn? Grimianus is sufficiently attracted to you to be willing to learn. He already defies Auroran convention by persisting in the face of your refusal. He will defy more. You can teach him to give and take, and you will learn to do both in alternation or together, in company with him."
Gladia looked searchingly into his eyes. "Elijah, are you trying to get rid of me?"
Slowly, Bailey nodded. "Yes, Gladia, I am. It's your happiness I want at this moment, more than I have ever wanted anything for myself or for Earth. I can't give you happiness, but if Grimianus can give it to you, I will be as happy, almost as happy, as if it were I myself who were making the gift. Gladia, he may surprise you with how eagerly he will break through the choreography when you show him how. And the word will somehow spread, so that others will come to swoon at your feet, and Grimianus may find it possible to teach other women. Gladia, it may be that you will revolutionize Auroran sex before you are through. You will have 3 centuries in which to do so." Gladia stared at him and then broke into a laugh.
"You are teasing. You are being deliberately foolish. I wouldn't have thought it of you, Elijah. You always look so long-faced and grave, Jehoshaphat."
And with the last word, she tried to imitate his somber baritone. Bailey said, "Perhaps I'm teasing a little, but I mean it in essence. Promise me that you will give Grimianus his chance." She came closer to him, and without hesitation, he put his arm around her. She placed her finger on his lips, and he made a small kissing motion. She said softly,
"Wouldn't you rather have me for yourself, Elijah?"
He said, just as softly, and unable to become unaware of the robots in the room, "Yes, I would, Gladia. I am ashamed to say that at this moment I would be content to have the Earth fall to pieces if I could have you. But I can't. In a few hours I'll be off Aurora, and there's no way you will be allowed to go with me. Nor do I think I will ever be allowed to come back to Aurora, nor is it possible that you will ever visit Earth. I will never see you again, Gladia, but I will never forget you, either. I will die in a few decades, and when I do, you will be as young as you are now. So we would have to say goodbye soon, whatever we could imagine is happening."
She put her head against his chest. "Oh, Elijah, twice you came into my life, each time for just a few hours. Twice you've done so much for me, and then said goodbye. The first time all I could do was touch your face, but what a difference that made. The second time I did so much more, and again what a difference that made. I'll never forget you, Elijah, if I live more centuries than I can count."
Bailey said,
then let it not be the kind of memory that cuts you off from happiness. Accept Grimionus and make him happy, and let him make you happy as well. And remember, there is nothing to prevent you from sending me letters. The hyperpost between Aurora and Earth exists.
I will, Elijah. And you will write to me as well?
I will, Gladia. Then there was silence, and reluctantly they moved apart. She remained standing in the middle of the room, and when he went to the door and turned back, she was still standing there with a little smile. His lips shaped, "Goodbye." And then, because there was no sound, he could not have done it with sound, he added, "My love." And her lips moved, too, "Goodbye, my dearest love." And he turned and walked out and knew he would never see her intangible form, never touch her again. 83. It was a while before Elijah could bring himself to consider the task that still lay before him. He had walked in silence perhaps half the distance back to Fastolf's establishment before he stopped and lifted his arm. The observant Giscard was at his side in a moment. Bailey said, "How much time before I must leave for the spaceport, Giscard?" 3 hours and 10 minutes, sir. Bailey thought a moment. "I would like to walk over to that tree there and sit down with my back against the trunk and spend some time there alone. With you, of course, but away from other human beings."
"In the open, sir?"
The robot's voice was unable to express surprise and shock, but somehow Bailey had the feeling that if Giscard were human, those words would express those feelings. "Yes," said Bailey. "I have to think, and after last night, a calm day like this, sunny, cloudless, mild, scarcely seems dangerous. I'll go indoors if I get agoraphobic, I promise. So will you join me?"
"Yes, sir."
"Good." Bailey led the way. They reached the tree, and Bailey touched the trunk gingerly and then stared at his finger, which remained perfectly clean. Reassured that leaning against the trunk would not dirty him, he inspected the ground and then sat down carefully and rested his back against the tree. It was not nearly as comfortable as the back of a chair would have been, but there was a feeling of peace, oddly enough, that perhaps he would not have had inside a room. Giscard remained standing, and Bailey said, "Won't you sit down, too?"
"I am as comfortable standing, sir."
"I know that, Giscard, but I will think better if I don't have to look up at you."
"I could not guard you against possible harm as efficiently if I were seated, sir."
"I know that, too, Giscard, but there is no reasonable danger at the moment. My mission is over, the case is solved, Dr. Fastolf's position is secure. You can risk being seated. And I order you to sit down." Giscard at once sat down, facing Bailey, but his eyes continued to wander in this direction and that, and were ever alert. Bailey looked at the sky, through the leaves of the tree, green against blue, listened to the susurration of insects and to the sudden call of a bird, noted a disturbance of grass nearby that might have meant a small animal passing by, and again thought how oddly peaceful it all was, and how different this peacefulness was from the clamor of the city. This was a quiet peace, an unhurried peace, a removed peace. For the first time, Bailey caught a faint suggestion of how it might be to prefer outside to the city. He caught himself being thankful to his experiences on Aurora, to the storm most of all, for he knew now that he would be able to leave Earth and face the conditions of whatever new world he might settle on, he and Ben, and perhaps Jesse. He said, "Last night, in the darkness of the storm, I wondered if I might have seen Aurora's satellite were it not for the clouds. It has a satellite, if I recall my reading correctly."
"Two, actually, sir. The larger is Tithonus, but it is still so small that it appears only as a moderately bright star. The smaller is not visible at all to the unaided eye and is simply called Tithonus II when it is referred to at all."
"Thank you. And thank you, Giscard, for rescuing me last night."
He looked at the robot.
"I don't know the proper way of thanking you."
"It is not necessary to thank me at all. I was merely following the dictates of the first law. I had no choice in the matter."
"Nevertheless, I may even owe you my life, and it is important that you know I understand this. And now, Giscard, what ought I to do?"
"Concerning what matter, sir?"
"My mission is over. Dr. Fastolf's views are secure. Earth's future may be assured. It would seem I have nothing more to do, and yet there is the matter of Jander."
"I do not understand, sir."
"Well, it seems settled that he died by a chance shift of positronic potential in his brain, but Fastolf admits the chance of that is infinitesimally small. Even with Amadiro's activities, the chance, though possibly greater, would remain infinitesimally small.
At least so Fastolf thinks. It continues to seem to me, then, that Jander's death was one of deliberate roboticide. Yet I don't dare raise this point now. I don't want to unsettle matters that have been brought to such a satisfactory conclusion. I don't want to put Fastolf in jeopardy again. I don't want to make Gladia unhappy. I don't know what to do. I can't talk to a human being about this. So I'm talking to you, Giscard.
Yes, sir.
I can always order you to erase whatever I have said and to remember it no more.
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, what ought I to do?
Giscard said, If there is a roboticide, sir, there must be someone capable of committing the act. Only Dr. Fastolf is capable of committing it, and he says he did not do it.
Yes, we started with that situation. I believe Dr. Fastolf, and I'm quite certain he did not do it.
Then how could there have been a roboticide, sir?
Suppose that someone else knew as much about robots as Dr. Fastolf does, Giscard.
Bailey drew up his knees and clasped his hands around them. He did not look at Giscard and seemed lost in thought. Who might that be, sir? Asked Giscard. And finally, Bailey reached the crucial point. He said,
You, Giscard.
84.
If Giscard had been human, he might have simply stared, silent and stunned, or he might have raged angrily, or shrunk back in terror, or had any of a dozen responses. Because he was a robot, he showed no sign of any emotion whatever, and simply said,
Why do you say so, sir?
Bailey said, I am quite certain, Giscard, that you know exactly how I have come to this conclusion. But you will do me a favor if you allow me, in this quiet place and in this bit of time before I must leave, to explain the matter for my own benefit. I would like to hear myself talk about it, and I would like you to correct me where I am wrong.
By all means, sir.
I suppose my initial mistake was to suppose that you are a less complicated and more primitive robot than Daniil is, simply because you look less human. A human being will always suppose that the more human a robot is, the more advanced, complicated, and intelligent he will be. To be sure, a robot like you is easily designed, and one like Daniil is a great problem for men like Amadeiro and can be handled only by a robotics genius such as Fastolf. However, the difficulty in designing Daniil lies, I suspect, in reproducing all the human aspects, such as facial expression, intonation of voice, gestures, and movements that are extraordinarily intricate, but have nothing really to do with complexity of mind. Am I right?
Quite right, sir.
So I automatically underestimated you, as does everyone. Yet you gave yourself away even before we landed on Aurora. You remember, perhaps, that during the landing I was overcome by an agoraphobic spasm and was for a moment even more helpless than I was last night in the storm.
I do, sir.
At the time, Daniil was in the cabin with me while you were outside the door. I was falling into a kind of catatonic state, noiselessly, and he was perhaps not looking at me, and so knew nothing of it. You were outside the cabin, and yet it was you who dashed in and turned off the viewer I was holding. You got there first ahead of Daniil, though his reflexes are as fast as yours, I'm sure, as he demonstrated when he prevented Dr. Fastolf from striking me.
Surely it cannot be that Dr. Fastolf was striking you.
He wasn't. He was merely demonstrating Daniil's reflexes. And yet, as I say, in the cabin, you got there first. I was scarcely in condition to observe that fact, but I have been trained to observe, and I am not put entirely out of action even by agoraphobic terror, as I showed last night. I did notice you were there first, though I tended to forget the fact. There is, of course, only one logical solution.
Bailey paused, as though expecting Giscard to agree, but the robot said nothing.
In later years, this was what Bailey pictured first when thinking of his stay on Aurora. Not the storm, not even Gladia. It was, rather, the quiet time under the tree, with the green leaves against the blue sky, the mild breeze, the soft sound of animals, and Giscard opposite him with faintly glowing eyes.
Bailey said, It would seem that you could somehow detect my state of mind, and even through the closed door tell that I was having a seizure of some sort.
Or, to put it briefly and perhaps simplistically, you can read minds.
Yes, sir, said Giscard quietly.
And you can somehow influence minds, too. I believe you noted that I had detected this, and you obscured it in my mind, so that I somehow did not remember or did not see the significance, if I did casually recall the situation. Yet you did not do that entirely efficiently, perhaps because your powers are limited.
Giscard said, Sir, the first law is paramount. I had to come to your rescue, although I quite realized that would give me away, and I had to obscure your mind, minimally, in order not to damage it in any way.
Bailey nodded. You have your difficulties, I see.
obscured minimally, so I did remember it when my mind was sufficiently relaxed and could think by free association. Just before I lost consciousness in the storm, I knew you would find me first, as you had on the ship. You may have found me by infrared radiation, but every mammal and bird was radiating as well, and that might be confusing. But you could also detect mental activity, even if I were unconscious, and that would help you to find me. It certainly helped, said Giscard. When I did remember, close to sleep or unconsciousness, I would forget again when fully conscious. Last night, however, I remembered for the third time, and I was not alone. Gladia was with me, and could repeat what I had said, which was, he was there first. And even then, I could not remember the meaning until a chance remark of Dr. Fastolf's led to a thought that worked its way past the obscuration. Then, once it dawned on me, I remembered other things. Thus, when I was wondering if I were really landing on Aurora, you assured me that our destination was Aurora before I actually asked. I presume you allow no one to know of your mind-reading ability.
That is true, sir.
Why is that?
My mind-reading gives me a unique ability to obey the first law, sir, so I value its existence. I can prevent harm to human beings far more efficiently. It seemed to me, however, that neither Dr. Fastolf nor any other human being would long tolerate a mind-reading robot. So I keep the ability secret. Dr. Fastolf loves to tell the legend of the mind-reading robot who was destroyed by Susan Calvin, and I would not want him to duplicate Dr. Calvin's feat.
Yes, he told the legend to me. I suspect that he knows subliminally that you read minds, or he wouldn't harp on the legend so. And it is dangerous for him to do so, as far as you are concerned, I should think. Certainly it helped put the matter in my mind.
I do what I can to neutralize the danger without unduly tampering with Dr. Fastolf's mind. Dr. Fastolf invariably stresses the legendary and impossible nature of the story when he tells it.
Yes, I remember that, too. But if Fastolf does not know you can read minds, it must be that you were not designed originally with these powers. How, then, do you come to have them? No, don't tell me, Giscard. Let me suggest something. Miss Vasilia was particularly fascinated with you when she was a young woman first becoming interested in robotics. She told me that she had experimented by programming you under Fastolf's distant supervision. Could it be that at one time, quite by accident, she did something that gave you the power? Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
And do you know what that something is?
Yes, sir.
Are you the only mind-reading robot that exists?
So far, yes, sir. There will be others.
If I asked you what it was that Dr. Vasilia did to you to give you such powers, or if Dr. Fastolf did, would you tell us by virtue of the second law?
No, sir, for it is my judgment that it would do you harm to know, and my refusal to tell you under the first law would take precedence. The problem would not arise, however, for I would know that someone was going to ask the question and give the order, and I would remove the impulse to do so from the mind before it could be done.
Yes, said Bailey. Evening before last, as we were walking from Gladia's to Fastolf's, I asked Daniil if he had had any contact with Jander during the latter's stay with Gladia, and he answered quite simply that he had not. I then turned to ask you the same question, and somehow I never did. You quashed the impulse for me to do so, I take it.
Yes, sir.
Because if I had asked, you would have had to say that you knew him well at that time, and you were not prepared to have me know that.
I was not, sir.
But during this period of contact with Jander, you knew he was being tested by Amadiro because, I presume, you could read Jander's mind or detect his positronic potentials.
Yes, sir, the same ability covers both robotic and human mental activity. Robots are far easier to understand.
You disapproved of Amadiro's activities because you agreed with Fastolf on the matter of settling the galaxy.
Yes, sir.
Why did you not stop Amadiro? Why did you not remove from his mind the impulse to test Jander?
Giscard said, Sir, I do not lightly tamper with minds. Amadiro's resolve was so deep and complex that, to remove it, I would have had to do much. And his mind is an advanced and important one that I would be reluctant to damage. I let the matter continue for a great while, during which I pondered on which action would best fulfill my first law needs. Finally, I decided on the proper manner to correct the situation. It was not an easy decision.
You decided to immobilize Jander before Amadiro could work out the method for designing a true humaniform robot. You knew how to do so, since you had over the years gained a perfect understanding of Fastolf's theories from Fastolf's mind, is that right?
Exactly, sir.
So that Fastolf was not the only one, after all, expert enough to immobilize Jander.
In a sense, he was, sir. My own ability is merely the reflection, or the extension, of his.
But it will do. Did you not see that this immobilization would place Fastolf in great danger, that he would be the natural suspect? Did you plan on admitting your action and revealing your abilities if that were necessary to save him?
Giscard said, I did indeed see that Dr. Fastolf would be in a painful situation, but I did not intend to admit my guilt. I had hoped to utilize the situation as a wedge for getting you to Aurora.
Getting me here? Was that your idea?
Bailey felt rather stupefied. Yes, sir. With your permission, I would like to explain.
Bailey said, please do.
Giscard said, I knew of you from Miss Gladia and from Dr. Fastolf, not only from what they said, but from what was in their minds. I learned of the situation on Earth. Earthmen, it was clear, live behind walls, which they find difficult to escape from. But it was just as clear to me that Aurorans live behind walls, too. Aurorans live behind walls made of robots, who shield them from all the vicissitudes of life, and who, in Amadeiro's plans, would build up shielded societies to wall up Aurorans settling new worlds. Aurorans also live behind walls made up of their own extended lives, which forces them to overvalue individuality and keeps them from pooling their scientific resources. Nor do they indulge in the rough and tumble of controversy, but, through their chairman, demand a short-circuiting of all uncertainty and that decisions on solutions be reached before problems are aired. They could not be bothered with actually thrashing out best solutions. What they wanted were quiet solutions. The Earthman's walls are crude and literal, so that their existence is obtrusive and obvious, and there are always some who long to escape. The Auroran's walls are immaterial and aren't even seen as walls, so that none can even conceive of escaping. It seemed to me, then, that it must be Earthmen and not Aurorans or any other spacers who must settle the galaxy and establish what will someday become a galactic empire. All this was Dr. Fastolf's reasoning, and I agreed with it. Dr. Fastolf was, however, satisfied with the reasoning, while I, given my own abilities, could not be. I had to examine the mind of at least one Earthman directly, in order that I might check my conclusions, and you were the Earthman I thought I could bring to Aurora. The immobilization of Jander served both to stop Amadeiro and to be the occasion for your visit. I pushed Miss Gladia very slightly to have her suggest your coming to Dr. Fastolf. I pushed him in turn very slightly to have him suggest it to the chairman, and I pushed the chairman very slightly to have him agree. Once you arrived, I studied you and was pleased with what I found. Giscard stopped speaking and became robotically impassive again. Bailey frowned. It occurs to me that I have earned no credit in what I have done here. You must have seen to it that I found my way to the truth. No, sir. On the contrary, I placed barriers in your way, reasonable ones, of course. I refused to let you recognize my abilities, even though I was forced to give myself away. I made sure that you felt dejection and despair at odd times. I encouraged you to risk the open in order to study your responses. Yet you found your way through and over all these obstacles, and I was pleased. I found that you longed for the walls of your city, but recognized that you must learn to do without them. I found that you suffered from the view of Aurora from space and from your exposure to the storm, but that neither prevented you from thinking nor drove you from your problem. I found that you accept your shortcomings and your brief life, and that you do not dodge controversy.
Bailey said, How do you know I am representative of Earth people generally?
I know that you are not, but from your mind I know there are some like you, and we will build with those. I will see to it, and now that I know clearly the path that must be followed, I will prepare other robots like myself, and they will see to it too.
Bailey said suddenly, You mean that mind-reading robots will come to Earth?
No, I do not, and you are right to be alarmed. Involving robots directly will mean the construction of the very walls that are dooming Aurora and the spacer worlds to paralysis. Earthmen will have to settle a galaxy without robots of any kind. It will mean difficulties, dangers, and harm without measure, events that robots would labor to prevent if they were present. But in the end, human beings will be better off for having worked on their own. And perhaps someday, some long-away day in the future, robots can intervene once more. Who can tell?
Bailey said curiously, Do you see the future? No, sir, but studying minds as I do, I can tell dimly that there are laws that govern human behavior, as the three laws of robotics govern robotic behavior. And with these, it may be that the future will be dealt with after a fashion someday. The human laws are far more complicated than the laws of robotics are, and I do not have any idea as to how they may be organized. They may be statistical in nature, so that they might not be fruitfully expressed except when dealing with huge populations. They may be very loosely binding, so that they might not make sense unless those huge populations are unaware of the operation of those laws.
Tell me, Giscard, is this what Dr. Fastolf refers to as the future science of psychohistory?
Yes, sir. I have gently inserted it into his mind, in order that the process of working it out begin. It will be needed someday, now that the existence of the spacer worlds as a long-lived robotized culture is coming to an end, and a new wave of human expansion by short-lived human beings, without robots, will be beginning. And now, Giscard rose to his feet, I think, sir, that we must go to Dr. Fastolf's establishment and prepare for your leave-taking. All that we have said here will not be repeated, of course.
It is strictly confidential, I assure you, said Bailey.
Indeed, said Giscard calmly. But you need not fear the responsibility of having to remain silent. I will allow you to remember, but you will never have the urge to repeat the matter, not the slightest.
Bailey lifted his eyebrows in resignation over that and said, One thing, though, Giscard, before you clamp down on me. Will you see to it that Gladia is not disturbed on this planet, that she is not treated unkindly because she is a Solarian and has accepted a robot as her husband, and that she will accept the offers of Grimianus?
I heard your final conversation with Miss Gladia, sir, and I understand. It will be taken care of. Now, sir, may I take my leave of you while no other is watching?
Giscard thrust out his hand in the most human gesture Bailey had ever seen him make. Bailey took it. The fingers were hard and cool in his grip. Goodbye, friend Giscard.
Giscard said, Goodbye, friend Elijah. And remember that, although people apply the phrase to Aurora, it is, from this point on, Earth itself that is the true world of the dawn.
End of The Robots of Dawn by Isaac Asimov.